And welcome to Community Kitchen. Once again, we've had the pleasure of talking with Sarah, who just brings some fantastic knowledge to the show, and I really appreciate all of my guests taking the time out to come and be part of Community Kitchen on 101.5. We've been talking about a different range of foods over the year, and of course you have to see that there's such a trend now of a lot of people going back to different types of diets. We have the vegan, we have the vegetarian, we have so many different types, and I think that a lot of the times you talk to people and they change their diet due to health. And I found this great article the other day, and it was talking about the protein needed, and if you're going to be changing your diet, these are things for consideration. The daily protein needs for a 19 to 20 year old woman is 46 grams, while men need about 64 grams. Now you consider those figures and you think, well, how much is that? So for example, a cup of cooked lentils has 13.5 grams of protein. Considering women need 56, men need 64, you really have to be quite creative in your cooking and your menu. A cup of kidney beans, for example, has 12.5 grams. A vegetable burger patty has 7 grams. Firm tofu, 170 grams, has 20 grams of protein. A cup of pasta has 7 grams. Peanut butter, 1 tablespoon, is 5.5. Soya milk, 250 mils, which is a cup, has 9.5 grams of protein. Soya yogurt, 200 grams, is 7.5. And wholemeal bread, 1 slice, has 4 grams. When you consider that and start to do the figures on that, you realize that you really have to have a very interesting combination. And I think that's, last week I think I talked about oils and the Mediterranean diet and how they were sort of putting it to the fact that a lot of the times it's the actual mixture of vegetables. It's just so wonderful. But also in this article, I saw how much iron do I need? And another interesting thing, we can read all these types of things, but actually getting a fundamental grasp with just how much and what we do to achieve this in our diet is always interesting. The daily iron needs for a 19 to 20 year old woman is 18 milligrams, while men need about 8 milligrams. Now, many plant foods such as whole grains, legumes, cashew nuts, tofu, dark rim, leafy vegetables contain a type of iron known as non-harm iron. This iron is not as well absorbed as that from meat, but foods rich in vitamin C can improve this. Combining iron-containing plant foods with vitamin C foods such as citrus fruits, tomatoes, broccoli, cabbage, capsicum, Brussels sprouts is the perfect way. Same as your calcium. What do I need to eat to take my calcium intake? Adults need 1,000 to 1,300 milligrams of calcium daily. Calcium can be found in almonds, chia seeds, tahini, dark green leafy vegetables, legumes. Once again, we talked about lentils and the kidney beans. There's so many beautiful combinations, and calcium fortified plant milk. These things that, you know, you can start looking around and seeing there's so many different alternatives if you are going to be changing your diet. And how can I get my omega-3 without fish? Once again, plant foods can supply essential omega-3 fats to your diet, and foods rich in omega-3 fats include walnuts, linseed, hemp seed, and chia seeds. These are some really great, there's some great recipes, and I love the fact now you can go on the supermarket shelves and the choices there. And as I often say, take one thing home that you've never had before and use it. Cook it. If you don't like it, give it to the chookies or the dog and say, well, that's something that I gave it a go, but I didn't particularly like it. But there's lots of different alternatives. Now, to change things and substitutes, that's another interesting thing, because if you're going to change your diet, then of course whipped cream, egg whites, cow's milk, butter, cheese, red meat, chicken, pork, beef, yogurt, honey, all these things are removed from your diet because of the fact that that is not classed as a vegan diet if you're actually consuming any of these items. So thinking of swapping them, if you're having whipped cream or egg whites, the drained liquid from canned chickpeas will substitute for the egg whites. Eggs in baking, ground linseed, 1 tablespoon with 3 tablespoons of water for each egg when you want to replace. Eggs for omelets, silken tofu, cow's milk, which you've got soya, almond, oat, rice, coconut milk, and choose the calcium fortified varieties. Margarine, you have to use a dairy-free spread or avocado. Butter in cooking, use applesauce in your baked items or just a vegetable oil. Cheese, well, of course, everyone's talking about using the cashew cheese. You have to use a plant-based vegan cheese and natural yeast flakes for cheese flavour or cashew cream as a replacement for cream cheese. Red meat, tempeh, tofu, eggplant or mushrooms. Chicken or pork, you can use jackfruit. And you can get that canned and it actually has the appearance of meat, believe it or not. Beef mince, lentils, textured vegetable protein, or what they use is corn, Q-U-O-R-N, which is a plant-based protein. And yogurt, you have to go to coconut, soya, or almond yogurt. And honey, you use pure maple syrup, golden syrup, or rice malt syrup. That's just an article I found in one of those little free giveaway supermarket recipe books. And I think it's good to have a little bit of a read, you know, because when you talk to a lot of people now, they're changing, as I said earlier. And if you're having people, when we're thinking of Christmas, I think I gave a recipe last week for a couple of different vegan items. I'll have them on my website for you. But it's nice to have that bit of a change. And you know what? It's great to actually change your menus around a little bit and think about different flavours. And just by, even if you want to stay with your same diet, just by adding a few different items, like using maybe some silken tofus or some tempehs and including them in your actual diet, just gives that bit of variety. I think it's always nice to have a bit of a go. Interesting, when I was just talking about honey before, it reminded me, I've been doing a little bit of work around the place and we had some tiny little shavings of hardwood timber and it was just almost dust. And it was on the lawn where we'd been cutting timber. And then that morning, they were just covered in bees. And I was talking to our beekeeper man who has always puts his bees on our property. And he was saying that whilst they may not be getting the nectar, they would actually probably be getting some of the fibre, the wood fibre, to go back and repair the hive. Amazing. I actually took a video because I couldn't believe there would have been about 150 bees swarmed in this area for about 300 by 300, just hovering and dipping their bodies in and out of the sawn timber. And I thought that was, it was interesting. Very strong smell because it was fresh hardwood. So, of course, they would have loved it. But anyway, just have a consideration of those little things I've mentioned before. I will put some details up on the web. And very shortly, when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit more about Christmas cooking. I'll be back with Community Kitchen. And welcome back to Community Kitchen. It's getting to that time of year that Community Kitchen will finish for 2019. We'll be back in 2020. Once again, coming back for some different ideas. Hopefully we'll be out in the bus a little bit more and doing our travelling around shows. So that will be so exciting, so that we'll be going out into the field. We'll be going to different shops, different shopping areas, and we'll be running our Community Kitchen and Morning Magazine on quite a regular basis and become a little bit more mobile, which will be very exciting. We plan some great little cooking events along the way, so I look forward to that in 2020. But back to our Christmas, we've actually done quite a few preparations over the last week. So far we have made the giveaways for the teachers and friends, we have stuffed the pork, the duck, the chicken, made the accompaniments, some easy salad sides, easy veggie sides, some dips to suit, got the breakfast on the go, we've discussed the menu ideas, now it's all up to you. And I thought that what I'd do is just give you a couple of nice little things to cook so you've got some friends or family dropping in. I know that I always make a boiled fruit cake and I always make a Siena cake, which is an Italian type of chocolate toffee cake, and it is just sensational. So I'm going to share those. Now, I'm sure everyone's got their family fruit cakes and a lot of people buy the Lion's cake because it's one of their fundraisers. I always make a boiled fruit cake because it's just such an easy cake, and I've been making the same recipe for many, many years. And the thing is, it's very easy to put together. So what I do is I boil my fruit. I use a cup of butter, 250 grams, a large cup of brown or white sugar. Now, in saying that, you get a different colour with the brown sugar in compared to the white. And I find that I like the brown personally because I think it's quite interesting. But there's a gourmet blend of mixed fruit out there now with lovely figs and all different types of dried fruits rather than the general raisins and whatever. And so sultanas. And I find that this is quite interesting because when I use that gourmet medley of fruits, I usually go for a raw caster sugar because it gives a lighter colour and that's really nice. So depending on what colour you want in your cake, but let's just go with what, 1 cup of sugar, 1.5 large cups of dried fruit and a large cup of cold water and a teaspoon of bicarb of soda. Now you're going to bring that to the boil. And what will happen is, as that starts to simmer, the soda will really bubble. So watch that. Make sure you're in the kitchen, you know, maybe preparing dinner, because you've got to cool that. So you can cool it overnight or in the morning when you're poaching some eggs or making some scrambles, you can get that going. And then set it aside to cool. So that was 1 cup of butter or 250 grams, a large cup of sugar, 1.5 cups of dried fruit, 1 large cup of cold water and a teaspoon of bicarb. Let that cool. Then coming back to it, pour into a large mixing bowl and beat in 3 eggs. Sift some your flours together, which is 1 large cup of self-raising and 1 large cup of plain flour. Also, I love to put a lot of nuts in my cake, so I use 1.5 cups of nuts, and I use a combination of almonds, Brazil, walnuts, or hazelnuts, whichever you like. Brazil nuts are absolutely beautiful in this particular cake. And I mix them in and stir my flours in and make it into a soft dough. So, you know, don't ever be too rough with your cakes when you're mixing. I always think it's one of those pleasures of hand mixing a mixture. It's beautiful. I always double line my cake tin with baking paper when I'm doing a fruit cake, because you're going to be cooking this for 1.5 hours. If you find it's getting a little bit too brown, what I do is just put a little baking paper on top of it halfway through, just gently open the oven, slip the paper on top, and that will slow it down. But I find that this is just a wonderful cake. You can add some, you might like to put a liqueur, or some people like to put a rum or something on their cake. I don't always. Sometimes I might squeeze an orange juice over it when it comes out, and it just really adds that nice moisture. And that, folks, is my boiled fruit cake, and it's very, very easy. It keeps really well, and a nice slice of that is just perfect when it's late at night and Christmas night and you're all sitting around still feeling like little stuffed ducks, but you can always put that little bit of something there. And the sienna cake, this is a little bit more complicated, but well worth the effort. So you are going to be roasting 3/4 cup of blanched almonds, and you need 3/4 cup of roasted hazelnuts. We don't want skin, so just if you're going to be buying them with the skin on, of course the best way is to pour them out into a tea towel when you've roasted them, and just rub them and then put them in a sieve and just shake them about, and all the little skins will come off. But, you know, probably knock yourself out and go and buy them without the skins, might be easier. So you've got 3/4 cup of roasted hazelnuts, 1/3 cup of glazed apricot, 1/3 cup of glazed pineapple, and 1/3 cup of glazed mixed peel. Once again, you can change that combination. And it's a Whole Food shop on Morayfield Road which sells a beautiful selection of glazed fruit. 2/3 cup of plain flour, 2 tablespoons of cocoa, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 60 grams of cooking chocolate, 1/3 cup of sugar, and 1/3 cup of honey. Now remember, I will be putting these up on the site, so you'll be able to get the measurements from there. So you've roasted the nuts, and have your oven temperature about 160, which is moderately slow. Line a 20-centimetre round cake tin with baking paper on the bottom and the sides, and in a bowl combine the almonds, the hazelnuts, the chopped glazed fruit, the flour, the cocoa, the cinnamon, and mix all the ingredients well. Melt the chocolate and set aside. In a saucepan, stir your honey and sugar over a low heat until the sugar dissolves. Bring to the boil and reduce to a simmer for about 5 minutes. Now, this is something that you have to watch. Hard to write these down, but it's nice to be able to talk about these things, because you want that to a toffee consistency. Then you pour the toffee and the chocolate into the dry mix. Now, this is going to be a hard stir, so don't leave it sit. Like, don't pour it in and go off and have a cup of tea or something, because you'll never, ever get that mixture moving. So once you've actually poured that toffee and chocolate into the dry mix, mix well. And that's why it's good to have your tin ready, because you want to spread that mixture quickly and evenly into the tin and bake for 35 minutes. That's it. But The idea is it becomes a really delicious, chewy, chocolatey, fruity mass. And what I do is I just cut that in little thin slithers. You can sprinkle it with icing sugar before serving. Traditionally, I think they do that. I don't do that because I just don't think it's necessary, in my opinion, but it might be something you'd like to do for the presentation. But that is absolutely such a treat and a nice thing to have. So the Sienna cake, it's called, and a boiled fruit cake, just a couple of nice little things to make your Christmas day a little bit more pleasurable. Now, that's it for me, folks. And, of course, I'll be back next week. And I think we've only got a couple of weeks from there. And, of course, we'll be looking forward to a bit of a break at the radio station. I think all of us do our weekly shows. And, of course, we've got so many volunteers working hard all the time. But we'll be back. And then I think we'll be talking a little bit more Christmas and a few different ideas I find along the way. But thanks for joining me this morning. Have a great week, and I'll be with you next week. And welcome to Community Kitchen. And, of course, today we have our wonderful Sarah from Basilea to give us some hints and tips and great ideas to use culinary herbs and flowers in our family cooking and, of course, our entertaining. So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you very much, Annette. It is lovely to be here on this morning.
I know. It's always great to talk about food, isn't it? Now, we're all having our whinge about the dry and, we're always hoping there's going to be some rain, but what can we do to preserve what we have in our gardens?
Yeah, it has been incredibly dry and the wind picking up, and we've had all of these fires. Our hearts go out to everybody who is having to deal with these fires at the moment. But it does mean that we've got less water falling and our conditions in our garden have gotten quite dire. I have had a lot of people coming up to me these last couple of weeks going, well, what can I do? And I also have a lot of people that are going out and just watering their plants, thinking that they're doing such a great thing for their plants, trying to keep them alive, but inherently doing a couple of things that might actually not be helping their plants. So I want to give some three good tips today about what to do in these really, really harsh conditions. Now, our first instinct is to go and water them, which, keeps the soil hydrated and will keep our plants alive. However, we need to make sure that we do low and slow watering. So a great thing for people to do is actually get those soaker hoses. Even the nice cheap green ones are really fantastic, upside down and hold down with mulch so that that water is just directly low and slow going into our ground so that it can really soak it up. A lot of people might have hydrophobic soil at the moment with this extreme drying out, which is watering your plants and seeing that water just cool and run off rather than soak into the ground. So several nice low soakings into the ground can help turn back that hydrophobic soil into beautiful, luscious soil again that our plants actually love to grow in. Now, the other thing with that is that when we do water our plants, we do need to remember to put a bit of food in that water.
Okay. We often forget about that. I mean, I forget about that. I think I like to have my regular food, but I don't always remember about my garden.
Yeah. So it is when we're watering, particularly with pots and with herbs that are, they're nutrient dense, so they're using a bit of food in order to create all of those beautiful essential oils and nutrition for us. So we do need to give them food that they can build their structure with. When we water plants, particularly in pots, all of that nutrient can often be washed out of the soil and out the bottom. So if we are, seeing a hot plant and continually watering them, we're also taking away part of their food as well each time we water.
So when you talk about food, you're talking like worm tea or green manure tea?
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, worm tea, even weed tea. So there is some beautiful things you can do with all of the weeds and offcuts in your garden. You can soak that in a bucket for 2 weeks so that it gets nice and stinky. The thing to remember is, though, that stinky water does mean that there is pathogens in there. And, of course, it's composting in there with all those sorts of bacteria creating and breaking down that matter. It is, remember, important that we don't use that directly on our plants, because then we're also transferring those bacteria into the soil of our plants. So with those wheat teas and other sorts of fertilizers, do make sure that they haven't got too much of an affluent smell when you put them on. A way to get rid of that in 24 hours is actually to put a little pump, similar, depending on how much water you're using, a little fish pump can actually pump and aerate that water for 24 hours, and in doing so, you actually kill off all of the bad pathogens and create beautiful microbes, composted microbes, that will be extremely beneficial for your plant.
So when you're saying weeds, can you use grass, cut grass?
You can use cut grass, however, the nutrient in that is low.
Ah, okay.
So if you think about it, your rosemary has so much more in there. Its nutrients more complex, and you will get more out of that than you would out of grass. That doesn't mean that you can't use grass.
No.
Just be mindful that it will just be a quite basic nutrient.
And the third tip?
The third tip is the mulching. Now, people wonder how crepe myrtles or those trees really do it. Their roots are really far down, where the soil takes a constant moisture and a constant temperature. So with mulching, we don't want to add just a little bit of pretty mulch layer. We want to add a blanket. We want to add a blanket so that the water does, so that the sun and the heat don't penetrate your soil to dry it out. So we want mulch that's at least a nice, dense 10 centimetres at a blanket over the top of things to help stop the drying out of the soil. If you haven't got your soil drying out, it stays lovely and moist through the hottest of temperatures.
So when you're talking before about watering low and slow, would you, if you were doing with the hose, just take it to each individual plant would be a suggestion?
Yeah. Only the root ball. It does. It's one of the things that it bothers me a lot to see someone watering their plant, sprinkling away, sprinkling all over their leaves and all the, it's a bit of a waste of water. When you're doing that, particularly over mulch, often the water doesn't go past your mulch layer to even get to your soil. Do need to low and slow. You've got the shower head on your hose, that extra oxygen as well going down into that soil when you hold it at least 10 centimetres from the root ball of that plant, and all that water is targeted. There are beautiful things that you can do with irrigation, and when you're setting up your irrigation, you set them up so that they are close to that particular plant and root ball to get the most efficiency out of your water. Now, I'm someone who, works with growing hydroponic plants as well as growing organic plants. So the importance of using water wisely rings very true to me.
Definitely.
So low and slow with your watering, making sure it gets past. I even move mulch aside so that I can get the water right down at the root rather than just sprinkling along the top of the emulsion. Really, it just gets dehydrated at soaked up by the sun.
And when you're talking about feeding, would you consider once a week would be a feed that you would do?
Yes, depending on the demand of the plant. Sort of leafy greens do like to be fed a little bit more, and the more that you feed them, the more that they'll give you.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is wonderful. However, things like rosemary, thyme, unless you are of them a lot, once a fortnight is more than what's required, really.
And what are the herbs that we're looking at now? We're in summer, for goodness sake. Today has been, the days are hot. So what are we working with now in what's the main herbs that you're using in this particular time?
The main herb that I'm using is basil at the moment. I'm about to make a huge amount of pesto so that I can give those away as gifts for Christmas time. Nothing much, nicer than receiving a made gift from the different varieties of basil as well. So we've got the opal basil as well as the African blue, which give a nice brown, purple tinge to the jar. And mint, loving mint at the moment, particularly chocolate mint. And I'm very fortunate to have introduced several times to my children different herbs, but at different ages they really appreciate the herbs. So not long ago I was making a fairly basic chocolate ripple. It's very easy for, if people know, the chocolate ripple cake with the cream and the chocolate ripple biscuit. It's something that I do with my children because it's quite easy and great for their development too, to whack on a bit of that whipped cream and then a biscuit, whipped cream and the biscuit. But I introduced chocolate mint to Ripple on the weekend, putting a piece of mint leaf in between each layer so that it would infuse that cream in the biscuit. And my daughter, who loves mint, she loves a lolly mint, not so much a mint leaf girl. But now I've managed to get her to just eat the chocolate mint leaf on its own as a little bit of a snack. And as a mum, I'm much happier that she'll eat those than eat going for the mint lolly.
I think they're so refreshing. And sometimes you forget about the fact that, see, I love mint and I think it grows quite profusely for me because I've just got one spot where I change the hoses all the time. So it seems to be where it gets a bit of water. But I love it in coleslaw, for example. It just lifts it a little bit. It's great in a potato salad. It's really good in your peas and doesn't have to do, you know, people sort of go, oh, if I'm having lamb, I'll have mint, you know. But if you just put it with different things, it just adds that bit of flavour.
And it adds that lightness. It makes it from, you know, a winter hearty meal into a bit of a light summer meal.
Yeah,
that
definitely.
The mentha certainly just adds that little bit. Sort of love it with lime and a lemonade.
Well, actually, that little bit of chocolate mint, now, is it going to be growing along the same lines as the regular mint?
It does. It does have a smaller leaf and a smaller structure to it. Mm-hmm. It's got more of a peppermint kick to it. And it looks a bit like chocolate, wherein it does have a darker, bit of a brown tinge to the leaf and to the stalk. Definite brown tinge to the stalk. So when you look at it and you smell it distinctively, you'll go, chocolate mint for sure.
I talked about doing trifles the other day and I thought, I went somewhere just recently and someone made this absolutely beautiful drink and they used orange peel and thyme. It was just delicious and they poured the soda over the top of the lime, orange, and then sprinkled it with little tiny bits of thyme. And I was thinking, oh, I don't know whether I'm going to enjoy that. But the oil from the orange and the taste of the thyme was delicious. So even starting to incorporate those flavours in, because I'm Christmas thinking at the moment, so everything you're thinking about, how can I make that pav a little bit more interesting? And I thought about the fact that, you know, using chocolate mint on the pavlovas and things like that would just make a beautiful treat.
Yeah, even today I gave some people some apple mint. They said they love apple pie and they've been making apple pie for a while. And I said, well, here, try some apple mint to go with that apple pie.
Nice.
Just something very different. And when we are getting together for all of these occasions over festive season, to have, you know, that little bit of conversation about, oh, you know, I picked this up and this is how I'm using it and this is how it's growing, and you can bring them over and have a look, and it's one of those wonderful conversation starters.
So with the, I must say, it's something that's growing quite well in my garden in one particular place. And I think, you know, when you look around your garden, you think, oh, I should have put all of that there because it grows so well, is the pineapple sage.
Oh, I love. And pineapple sage is that plant that lets you know when you're allowed to start celebrating that festive season, unlike the shops that have everything out as soon as Halloween is done. Mm. Pineapple sage, when it starts flowering, which has only been in the last 2 weeks, that's the time to start thinking about Christmas, I think.
Oh, it's just beautiful. Now, with that, would you, you know, you've had just done a tea workshop. Would you use your pineapple sage in drinks?
I do use the pineapple sage in drinks. I'd use them more in the fruity drinks where
yes.
you've got juices in there, because it can be a little bit bitter being sage.
Yes.
Inherently, it is a little bit bitter. The flowers are very, very sweet. The pineapple sage flowers are very, very sweet, and you can use that in anything. Fantastic little garnish just over a cold ice water.
Delicious.
However, the leaves, they do have that beautiful fruitiness to them, and of course inherent benefits when they're used in your cooking and infused into that juice, but definitely with a sweeter touch. Always recommend to have pineapple sage leaves when infused with a little bit of sweet kick in.
Fantastic. Sarah, thanks for joining us and taking the time to share some of those wonderful little hints. I like that idea of that chocolate mint. And I think you're right, by sharing, I mean, every time people get together, if they like eating food or gardening, there seems to be this conversation that always goes back to, let's combine that with the food, because it seems to go a long way and a lot of pleasure at the same time.
Yeah, it's good for the soul. It's good for the well-being.
It is. Thank you very much for taking the time out, and we'll look forward forward to speaking to you before we wrap up for the end of the year. And once again, thanks for taking the time to be part of Community Kitchen every month. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. Everyone have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Sarah. Bye now. And we've been talking to Sarah, of course, and we are very lucky, folks, that we've had some great contributors to our show over the year. And, of course, we'll be coming very shortly, and we're going to be talking a few different substitutes if you're looking to have a vegan-based diet. And, of course, I'm going to be sharing some ideas about a few treats to put on your family table. Nice Christmas cake and lovely Sienna cake, worth the effort. I'll be with you next week. Until then, have a great week and enjoy your day. Bye now.